Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America podcast. Today we have, this is JJ Cooper and Ben Badler, as we are going to talk about the Rule 5 draft, the winter meetings in general, and just a little bit of kind of what's going on in baseball as we get ready for, it kind of slows down a little bit here with Christmas coming, I guess, for at least a couple of days.
I know it certainly doesn't slow down right here in our office right now. You know, we're getting ready to put the prospect handbook to press right now, so taking a little break right now to talk a little Rule 5 draft and know some of the goings on from the trades during the winter meetings today.
So with the Rule 5, we'll start off with that. You know, Terrell Young, Reds right-hander, was the number one pick. It was a relatively, I mean, there were a lot of guys taken. I don't know if this is going to be a Rule 5 draft. I guess my take is that I think this is a Rule 5 draft that when we look back on it, I don't expect that we'll go, wow, you know, that was when the next Johan Santana was taken or the next Joaquin Soria. But, you know, I do think there'll probably be a number of guys who end up sticking at least for a little while out of this. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I mean, to be able to predict if there is going to be a Johan Santana, you know, obviously the, you know, the Johan Santana would have been protected on the 40-man roster if we had known at the time that he would become Johan Santana. I think when you look at a guy like Terrell Young, you know, number one pick in the Rule 5 draft, how does he compare to Soria? You know, I think there were, you know, a little bit more high expectations for Soria when he was picked compared to Young. You know, certainly a lot of arm strength with Young, but I agree. There's certainly some usable parts here, some guys with some upside, but obviously some pretty significant questions as well to them. But you know, I think there's some of these guys who can fit into a, you know, a part-time role, and you know, maybe they stick this year in the big leagues, maybe go down for a little bit of a little more time in the farm system, and maybe in 2010, just to get a little bit more seasoning too. And then maybe develop into regular big leaguers in time.
It's interesting. One of the things to me, and I want to at some point research this more extensively, and I've never found the time to do that, but there used to be, it seemed like, that there were a lot of athletic, you know, basically undeveloped guys who had taken the Rule 5, especially middle infielders. And I think teams have kind of wisened up that that almost never works, because if you take kind of that, you know, that shortstop, I think it was the Jose Cruz from the Brewers was the number one pick, like in 2002, 2003. Those guys almost always, they lose that year of development time by sitting in the big leagues and getting, you know, 75, 100 at bats. It does seem like now that teams are taking more, like the MOs either are arms, you know, pitchers, you know, you can put a guy in the pen and he really doesn't lose development because he does get some opportunities to kind of do what he wants to, you know, to learn pitching in the, out of the pen. Or the position players in general are guys who you look at more as they don't may not be the highest ceiling guys in the world, but you do look at them and say, okay, this guy could serve as a backup, and maybe he's just a cheap backup you get for the major league minimum.
And I think actually it's kind of interesting you mentioned that, because the Padres took Eivor Cabrera this year. You know, their philosophy in the Rule 5 draft and in previous years has kind of been to try to, you know, shore up their bullpen. You know, like Carlos Guevara or some of the other guys that they've taken in recent years versus Cabrera, who's a, you know, toolsy, you know, not super toolsy. He's just got a lot of speed, a good glove at shortstop. But, you know, he was in the South Atlantic League last year, and you're expecting him to make a jump of three levels now, jump over high A, double A, and triple A all the way to the big leagues. You know, it's going to be tough for him to make that jump, I would think, compared to a guy like Luis Perdomo, you know, a right-handed pitcher who can, you know, pitch and get right-handed batters out because he has excellent stuff. And kind of hide him in that role and kind of bring him along that way. So I think, you know, it was interesting to see the Padres do that this year and kind of, you know, go away from that philosophy from recent years.
That's the ones I don't understand going that way in some ways, because, like, with Cabrera, when you do that, next year, like, say you keep him on your roster all year, which means essentially that you're playing almost a half man down in some ways, because, I mean, yeah, there aren't, not that there aren't some roles, like, okay, you can put him in a pinch run, you can put him in to play defense, you know, late innings maybe occasionally, but I just see with those guys, especially a guy making that jump from low a year from now, he's going to be further behind. He's in low A basically at the age where he can be eligible for the Rule 5 draft, and then next year he'll be essentially a further year away, having not really had any chance to develop except for maybe winter ball. I think it's really hard if he does stick, it's really hard for those guys to ever develop anything offensively, because that lost year of at-bats, you need that 400 at-bats that you're going to get in the minors that you're not going to get.
I agree with you. The one thing, though, is that I think the Padres might be a good fit for if any team is going to take a chance on him. You know, the Padres probably are not going to be in contention in 2009. No. So maybe you do take a chance on a guy like that, maybe a guy with a little bit of upside. You know, to see the Pirates do that with Donald Veal. You know, I watched Donald Veal's last start of the year, and, you know, he and in Double-A this year, and he had about as not just poor control, but he wasn't hitting anywhere even near the catcher's glove. He just was all over the place. He was, you know, 90 to 91 in the first inning and settled in around 88, 89 in the second inning because he'd probably racked up about 40 to 50 pitches at that point. So, you know, it certainly wasn't, you know, the impressive stuff that we had seen out of him out of a couple of years ago. So I don't think most teams would take a chance on him, but if you're the Pirates, you know, why not take a chance on him and, you know, see what you can have there. Maybe Joe Kerrigan can fix him. You know, who knows what you have there. So maybe for a team like the Padres or the Pirates, you know, sometimes those kind of gambles can pay off in the future if you have that kind of, you know, flexibility and patience to wait it out to be able to contend in later years rather than just in 2009.
Yeah, that's the question I was going to ask you. So who do you, out of the Major League Rule 5 draft today, who, you know, is there a guy that jumps out to you as, hey, I really like that pick. I think this is a guy who either, you know, a talent who could develop into something or a guy who, you know, hey, that guy can contribute right now, at least, you know, in a limited role.
Well, I think the two guys who jump out to me were the second pick overall, Rigi Corona, a middle infielder with the Yankees. Selected by the Seattle Mariners. You know, he was a guy, you know, we talked about the toolsy middle infielders. I don't think Corona's necessarily a very toolsy player, but he was, you know, compared to Cabrera, who was in A-ball in low A, Corona was in double A, and he was only 21 years old. So for him to make the jump from double A to the majors, it isn't quite as steep as what Cabrera's going to have to do. You know, Corona's not going to hit for a lot of power, but he'll fill in, he'll play good defense, he'll get on base, you know, maybe hit for a little bit of average, and who knows, maybe a few years down the line, you know, he develops a little bit more power and gets a little more strength, learns to be able to drive the ball, and can be a real weapon in the middle of the infield if you have a guy who can just get on base a little bit and play good defense. So I like that pick. The other pick I like was a guy I mentioned earlier, Perdomo, taken number 6 overall by the Giants from the Cardinals. You know, I was really surprised that the Cardinals didn't protect him. You know, this is a guy that they just traded Anthony Reyes for just a few months ago, and now they might have just lost him to the Giants for basically amounting to a selling of Anthony Reyes for $50,000.
That's the cheap rate for Anthony Reyes.
So, you know, Perdomo's a guy, 93 to 94 mile an hour fastball out of the bullpen, and a nasty slider anywhere from the mid to high 80s. And if you look at his splits throughout his career, he's much, much better against right-handed pitchers. You know, I probably wouldn't use him against lefties too much this year if I were the Giants, but, you know, he can come in and get right-handed batters out. You know, he's still got to work on his control a little bit, but, you know, he's a guy who I was surprised was still available and not surprised at all that he was taken. So I think that was a good pickup for the Giants.
The guy that jumps out to me, and I mean, there's a chance that he will, you know, will end up in spring training seeing this guy, you know, sent back to the Twins. But I really like the pick of Jose Lugo, who was actually taken by the Royals, but then they immediately sold him to the Mariners. When I was doing the Florida State League calls, he was one of those guys who's not in any way a finished product yet. But if you talk about pure stuff, you know, 91 up to 95, you know, with the fastball, has some, you know, has a breaking pitch that at times, you know, a breaking ball that at times is, you know, is something. And from the left side, especially, like, you talk about a guy like that and you do put him in a role. Like, for this year, you just say, okay, you know, we're not going to use you, you know, in a high, you know, leverage role, but you can come in the sixth inning and basically throw gas from the left side. And a year from now, you send him back down, you know, to the minors. Because if you talked about all the pitchers that the Twins had in you know, the Florida State League, and they had some guys, if you talked about pure upside, Lugo was sitting there, was, you know, right up there with any of them that they had there. He's a guy who has a chance that you can say, okay, if you have some patience with him, you're talking about a lefty who could, you know, down the road be, you know, he's got the fastball that a lefty with a fastball like that you don't often find in the Rule 5 draft. So I think he could be interesting. I'll be fascinated to see if James Skelton, Tigers catcher who was picked by the Diamondbacks. He was a guy also in Florida State League. I have my bias from a Florida State League guys. Guy can hit. Every question about him is that basically you see him behind the plate and you go, there's just no way. This guy's too small. This guy's too skinny. He's going to wear down. But he's always, he's got an arm, he can actually, and he can hit. And so catchers, it's often a position that's very hard for a young guy to even do it if he's not picked up in the Rule 5 draft. But we did see a couple of years ago with the Nationals and what they did with Jesus Flores, they snagged from the Mets. It can occasionally happen. I don't think Skelton's in any way a talent like Flores was. Flores was kind of baffling because I was like a top 15 prospect in the Mets system. But I do think Skelton's a guy who at least has some attributes that are pretty good. I think he'll probably, like most of these guys, end up being sent back. But he's an intriguing guy. Like, I'll be interested to watch, see what happens with him in spring training.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you look at the strike zone discipline that he has, and then you'll get the Diamondbacks catching situation. You hear him, in rumors possibly trading some of their guys to the big league level. But, if you look at the guys in their minor league level, the Diamondbacks catching situation, it's really not very good. They have Rosmel Perez a little bit lower in the minor leagues. He caught in the Pioneer League this year. But, the Diamondbacks, I think there is some of the catching in the minor leagues is not one of the strengths of their farm system right now. So if Skelton can come in and he can stick with the big league club, it's certainly an advantage for them to have another young catcher who's big league ready or near big league ready at least right now.
The interesting thing with that, though, at the same time is that he's coming out of a Tigers system. I think we'd both agree that the Tigers, the Tigers' depth in the minors is very thin. It's kind of hard to imagine that a guy who would not have ranked in the Tigers' top 10 could stick. It's kind of a little baffling to me if he does. But if it is, sometimes teams just evaluate their talent. If he does stick, I think that would be a case that the Tigers did misevaluate their talent, because we thought this guy would get through, or we didn't think he'd turn into anything.
Yeah, and you see that. I mean, the Tigers themselves, they left Skelton unprotected, and then they take Kyle Bloom, a left-hander from the Pirates. You don't think the Pirates is having a great farm system themselves, but obviously the Tigers kept a spot open, and then they were able to take Kyle Bloom. Donald Veal in the Cubs system. The Cubs are also probably, not one of the strongest farm systems right now in baseball, but. And then the Pirates get Veal from the Cubs. So, sometimes, guys can, teams can find.
It's one of those things where it's funny because I know some of the comments we saw on the day of the Rule 5 draft. Having a number of guys taken in the Rule 5 draft doesn't necessarily mean that much about how much depth you have in the organization. Like, that's the one thing I think, we saw some Yankees, I saw some comments from Yankees fans like, wow, we really must have a lot of talent in the minor leagues, which the Yankees do have talent in the minor leagues. But having guys taken in the Rule 5 draft, I was talking to Aaron Fitt, I do the Reds organization. Aaron does the Nationals as we finish up the prospect handbook. And he was kind of talking about Terrell Young. And he's like, well, was Young going to make your top 30? And it's like, no. I mean, he's a guy who's basically in 5 years and he's still an A-ball and he's had some command difficulties. He's got a great arm, but just so far away and kind of so much to project on him that no, he wasn't going to make it. That's the thing. We're fascinated with the Rule 5 draft. Everyone else is obviously fascinated with the Rule 5 draft. At the same time, generally what we are talking about here is guys who are not top 30 prospects even. In some cases they are, but in a lot of these cases are not top 30 prospects getting picked who then they're taken in the Rule 5 draft, and all of a sudden, there's kind of this cachet of, hey, they must be a pretty good prospect. No, not, there's something interesting there, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're a top 30 guy even after the draft, even after the Rule 5 draft.
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously not talking about the cream of the crop here, but, these are guys who can fill in a lot of times and be the 24th, 25th man on a big league roster and maybe contribute. You look through the history of the Rule 5 drafts, and, we all want to talk about, who's the next Johan Santana or Soria or Dan Uggla, but usually, in most cases, it doesn't.
It's who's the next guy who was offered back for $25,000 2 weeks into spring training.
Yeah, usually it's who is this guy or who was this guy who was drafted. And, in 2005 in the Rule 5 draft.
One thing we started talking about catchers I wanted to get to is that if you go to baseballamerica.com/blog/prospects right now, Ben has a post just put up yesterday on caught stealing percentages for catchers. Now, I should say caught stealing percentages for catching prospects. It wasn't a ranking of here's the top caught stealing percentages of anyone in the minors. It was more of a focus on of the guys who actually, you know, are prospects. But when you did that, did anything jump out to you as surprising? Did anyone kind of, wow, that was, you know, a little better than I thought for his reputation, or a little worse than I thought for his reputation defensively?
No, I think the one guy who stands out and he's kind of fascinating to me is Pablo Sandoval. He's just fascinating in every way. I mean,
he is fascinating.
He's just in terms of his offense. I mean, to be able to find a guy like that who rarely strikes out and hits for tremendous power and is doing so right now in Venezuela.
Truly, in his case, you can say did it at pretty much every level of baseball this year. He did it in A ball, he did it in Double A, he did it in Triple A, he did it in the big leagues, and now he's doing it in winter ball.
He is fascinating to me, and doing it all as a catcher. He's 5'11", he's 245 pounds, he's built like a rock. He's just a big, you know, heavy but strong heavy guy. But he's also extremely coordinated. I mean, he throws right handed. He can throw left. He can throw left handed curveballs. I mean, this guy has phenomenal hand-eye coordination, and just he's really just an intriguing guy. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about him, you know, moving to first base. But when you look at, you know, the last couple of years, I think he threw almost 50% of runners in 2007, and this year he was again one of the best catchers in the league at throwing out runners. And, you know, like I say online, it's the ranking. Think of it just as a ranking of guys by, you know, any statistic, batting average, on base percentage.
It's one little snapshot. It doesn't,
you know, it's just a number. You know, that's obviously why we talk to scouts about all these guys and go through those lenses to talk about these guys. But this is just a record of, you know, of what they did this year. You know, maybe, you know, it might have been that the San Jose pitching staff was excellent at holding runners on, or they had a lot of left-handed pitchers or something like that. But on the other hand, you know, Sandoval's now done this back-to-back years. And the other thing that I'm going to talk about...
He did it at two levels. I mean, he did it, you know, it's not... I mean, he ranked third among basically all the prospects that you looked at. I mean, he was third, you know, in the minors.
He's got a great arm, too. So, you know, I think the scouting reports back it up. You know, what's interesting to me about him is that, you know, he also didn't commit too many pass balls this year. So he didn't really let that many balls, you know, he's not going to be a guy who lets too many balls go by him to the backstop. You know, maybe, again, that's because the San Jose pitching staff did have guys like Tim Alderson and Kevin Pucetas, guys with good control. So if the guys are throwing fewer balls in the dirt, it gives them, you know, maybe fewer opportunities for the pass balls.
And you don't want to give him too much credit for this, but also, I mean, when it comes to calling a game and all, I mean, he's obviously was working with, you know, with some good, you know, some very good pitchers, but they had one of the best pitching staffs in the minors also as far as production. I mean, they basically were among, I think they at one point had, you know, four guys in the top 10 in the Cal League in ERA. He was the guy behind the plate for a while, you know, for a good while with that. I mean, I don't want to give him too much credit for that, but it's also like, it doesn't seem like that he was calling a terrible game when he was out there either, unless they were shaking him off left and right.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you have all that information, you have all that going for him. It sounds like there's just concerns about, you know, whether his body is going to hold up and be able to catch. You know, it sounds like they're going to move him at first base, maybe even third base. He did play third base before. I don't know about his if he's ideally suited to third. You know, you'd like to have his arm strength over there, certainly. You know, but he's a guy who, you know, why not let him catch? You know, you can't have your catcher catch, you know, 162 games in the big leagues because it just hasn't been done. I think it's
the Dodgers are trying to see if you can do it, and they're finding out that, you know, I don't care how good you are, you'll. Guys will wear down.
So you got to have your backup catcher catch at least, you know, a quarter of your games. You know, why not give those opportunities to Sandoval and get his bat into the lineup that way, and keep your first baseman's bat in the lineup as well? I'd like to see him catch for, you know, they have Buster Posey in the system too. You know, eventually I think you worry about that a little bit down the line, or, you know, if Sandoval ends up not being able to catch down the line because of his weight or his knees can't handle the load. I think you worry about it later down the line, but I'd like to see him, you know, be able to continue catching for a little bit at least.
I don't see, to me, I understand completely when you have a guy and it's like he can't do it. Like, I understand, like, if you're the Brewers right now and you think that Matt Gammel is ready offensively to help you, and you say, okay, he'll kill us at third base if we put him out there at third base. And I can understand if that's the situation, saying, okay, we're going to move this guy to a, you know, to a less taxing and also less valuable position, where Matt Gammel's bat will be less valuable if he's, you know, a first baseman or a left fielder or whatever. But if you have a guy who is at least now doing the job, like if you look at Sandoval and say, yeah, he's not a guy we want to put out there 125 games at catcher, but you know what? We could be okay with this guy at catcher. Why move him before you have to? Why? Yeah, I completely agree. Like, if he can catch, he's much more valuable for you. You know, even if he is, yeah, a backup catcher who catches, you know, 35, 45 games, plays a little bit of first base, you know, pinch hits some. I mean, serving that kind of role with, you know, with being a catcher, that's much more valuable than just moving him to first base and saying, okay, you know,
just hey, plop down at first base the whole season.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he's going to, you know, if you do need to move him down the road, it's not like he won't be able to pick up first base. I mean, that's not something where you're cutting something off, you know, of, hey, he won't be able to handle that transition down the road. And not only that, it's not something where you look at it and say, in his case, I mean, he's shown that he can hit while catching. It's not something where you say, you know what, we're going to move him because clearly the demands of the position and learning the position is affecting his bat. I mean, it hadn't up to now.
Oh, the bat's out. I think the bat would play perfectly fine at first base.
Oh, yeah.
I think he'd be an outstanding hitter there. But obviously, when you can have that production at catcher,
right.
It's. I mean, I don't see why not at least let him try it out there.
And especially when you don't have. I mean, the Giants aren't sitting in a situation right now where you go, you know what, they're one spot away from. From being a World Series contender. They're not. I mean, this is the time where they can basically, you know, kind of see, you know, hey, can he do it? And if he can, you're in great shape. You've got a much more valuable, you know, commodity. And if not, hey, you can always slide him over to first base even midway through the season. But anyone else, like, on the other side, did anyone jump out? It's like, wow, you know, I mean, his reputation's pretty good, and he didn't throw out a whole lot of guys, or nope, that just backs up what we've been hearing about, you know, this guy really does struggle behind the plate.
Well, one guy I think is on that list who's a little bit lower, and again, you know, this is why we say it's just a number. It's basically just a record of their performance. You know, the same way if a guy doesn't necessarily hit in A ball, we don't write him off as a prospect. We don't say he's not going to hit later on down the line. Carlos Santana, I mean, I won't say it surprised me because I did the Indians list this year. But if you look at some of his, you know, defensive numbers this year, the numbers aren't necessarily that great, but he's a guy who was just converted to catcher this year. Or last year, I should say. And he, you know, you don't just learn catcher in a year necessarily. It's a tough position to pick up. And be able to learn how to hit at the professional level as well.
And that's the thing that impressed me with Santana is that he was able to, you know, I mean, catching's a position where there's a lot of, you know, scouting cliches, and one of them is, you know, well, catchers, you know, you got to give them longer. And I really do think that is true. Like, you can see a lot of big league catchers who, if you go back and look at it, it's like, okay, that guy did take, the bat took a little longer to come along because there's so much to mastering catching that it, you know, you don't get the same. I mean, if you're a first baseman, you're working on hitting 90% of the time. I mean, okay, you know, you take your infield and all that, but unless you're an absolute butcher over there, your main focus is every day, you know, as you go up through the minors is, okay, I got to make sure I hit. Catching, there's so much to, you know, so much to the defense aspect that I do think a lot of times it takes a little longer. In Santana's case, he kept hitting even as he is, you know, trying to learn, you know, what is really the most difficult defensive position out there.
And what's encouraging for him, too, is, you know, maybe the numbers aren't there defensively, but, you know, the tools are all there. He's got a great throwing arm. He's quick. He's agile behind the plate. You know, scouts, you talk to them from other teams, and, you know, one of the things that stands out to him as a positive is his defense. So I think it's just a kind of a temporary thing where right now, you know, you wouldn't put him back there on a major league team. Even if he did have a major league ready bat right now, just because his defense isn't quite ready, you know, right now. But with more development, more repetition, that's the thing with catcher too. I was talking to a scout about that this year. We were talking about another player actually on this list down there too. But you know, one of the things with catching is you can get better at catching every day because you're always catching bullpens. You're always catching in a game. you know, you're always experiencing. You can always get more repetitions behind the plate. You can always practice your catching and your skills like that. So it's one position where you can get a lot of repetition and a lot more time to improve there, just on an everyday basis if you are a catcher.
One thing I found interesting, I mean, and their numbers aren't that different, but and this is, you know, probably an example of where, you know, a pitching staff plays a part in all that. But, you know, if you talked about Jesus Montero and Austin Romine, and as far as the reputation is Montero is, you know, this really good bat who probably will end up having to move off the position down the road. And Romine is, you know, kind of the all-around catcher whose bat's, you know, probably going to be good enough to, you know, as he goes up the level, but, you know, has a pretty good defensive reputation. And it was interesting, Montero actually ranked higher on caught stealing percentage than Romine, but also both of them were near the bottom, which, you know, very well might indicate, you know, okay, that the Charleston staff was not exactly one that was really comfortable holding on, you know, runners, didn't allow the slide step, all those kind of things.
Exactly. No, like you said, a lot of organizations don't even let their pitchers use the slide step in the lower levels of the minor leagues, or, you know, some, if you're in low A, you probably haven't mastered the art of, especially if you're just coming out of high school, you were probably a stud pitcher in high school. You probably didn't allow many base runners at all. So you probably, what do you
and
care
didn't
about?
Really, I mean, yeah, yeah. That's one thing. It's funny, yeah, but we do, when we're talking to guys, you know, scouts about, especially in A-ball, about pitchers, one of the questions you ask is, so how is he about the other parts of the game? And you do hear that a lot. You hear that a lot. It's like, well, he still has to learn how to, you know, hold runners because it's just not something that he ever, like a lot of these guys in high school are pretty much told, don't worry about the runner at first base. Look, you know, you're going to strike the next guy out.
If what runner on first base?
Yeah. And if he does get on, it's like, don't worry about it because, you know, you're going to strike the next two guys out, and I don't care if he stole third. He's not going to read, you know, not going to score. So, but, no, it's an interesting story that that Ben did, you know, baseballamerica.com/blog/prospects. It's right near the top. I think right now it's just under a story about how the death of the Hawaii Winter Baseball League for the second time. We had the Hawaii Winter League fail, you know, basically shut down in the late 90s. They resurrected it 3 years ago, and now it's gone. We're going to be going, looks like, to having two leagues in Arizona. We'll have the Arizona Fall League. We'll have, under it, we'll have the kind of the Junior Arizona Fall League, or whatever name they're going to put out to it, which will kind of cut down on you know, travel expenses, scouting expenses, you know, for teams as they scout it. That was one of the little tidbits that came out at the very end of the winter meetings. You know, kind of that decision was made, which led to the Hawaii Winter League announcing that they're going to have to shut down. But kind of what everyone followed during the winter leagues, you know, during the winter meetings was, okay, you know, there was several trades, there were several free agent moves. So looking at it, who did you think came out of the winter meetings, you know, who do you say, hey, they really had a really good winter meetings? And who do you say, man, I don't know what they were kind of thinking there?
Well, I think the, you know, the Rays, they didn't make a huge splash out there, but, you know, one move that comes to mind that I really liked that they did was, you know, trading Edwin Jackson for Matt Joyce. You know, Joyce, you know, he was platooned a lot this year. You know, he hasn't really shown a significant platoon split throughout his career. But he's a guy who can step in and fill in right now, I think, in an everyday role for the Rays. You know, maybe they do end up platooning him in that role, and, you know, he can be effective in that role. But they traded him for Edwin Jackson, who, you know, to this point in his career, really hasn't shown that he can be, you know, anything more than really a four or a five starter. You know, he throws hard, and it's great, and, you know, there's always going to be a market for a guy who can throw in the mid to high 90s with a mid to high 80s slider. You know, on the other hand, you know, I think the Rays are pretty smart people. You know, if they couldn't fix him or get Jackson to, you know, really develop and reach his ultimate potential, you know, I have a lot of respect for Rick Knapp and, you know, everyone in the Tigers organization as well. But, you know, I'm not certain that the Tigers are magically going to, you know, snap their fingers, flip a switch, and turn Jackson into a, you know, a real star or anything like that. So, you know, now you have Jackson, who's, you know, 3 years of arbitration eligibility left. Joyce, who has, you know his full service time ahead of him. So I really like that move for the Rays, and certainly they're, you know, they're not lacking in any pitching talent in the rotation.
That's not a problem, considering they still have about, you know, they've got David Price just basically to plug in as the fifth starter, which that's a pretty good fifth starter to have there. You know, he won't be the fifth starter for long. He'll be the number two, number three before, you know.
A fifth starter in name only.
Yeah. And then, but then behind that, right, you still have the Jeff Niemans and all of the world who, you know, if an injury happens, they're still covered as far as starting pitching. I do think I'll even give Rays credit, and like they actually turned Edwin Jackson, like you said, like, you know, it's if the Rays couldn't get him to become the number one, number two starter that, you know, or, you know, way back kind of was the projection for him, I give the Rays credit in that they kind of took him from, I mean, he was essentially a failed prospect when they got him. They were able to get him to that point where he is a, you know, a major league starter, a number four, say, and then turn him around and trade him for a lot more than what they gave up for him. So that, you know, it's also kind of credit to the Rays. Hey, they bought low and they sold higher than what they, you know, than what they bought in the case of Edwin Jackson. I do think, I mean, it's kind of a very much, I mean, the Mets have a lot that they needed to do. I mean, because, hey, you know, they're basically in the situation where the Phillies now can rightfully, the Phillies can call them choke artists. That's, you know, that's pretty funny to say. Yeah, that's, you know, that's pretty, and they did. Cole Hamels did. But I do like what they did as far as, I mean, that was a pretty busy week, but they really have kind of recast their bullpen now in a way that, you know, it's, to me at least, they spent a lot of money to do it, but, you know, a 12-player trade, which we don't see 12-player trades very often, but you look at it and it's like, I don't think they really gave up a whole lot there. They get J.J. Putz back. I mean, you may disagree, you may agree with me, I don't know, but I, you know, I just thought they come out of this going, you know what, okay, at least we fixed kind of what was the giant sucking wound of the 2008 team. So, you know, they're in better shape now, I thought, than they were going in.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you can think you can maybe get a reliever cheaper or something like that, but, you know, these are two guys who have a, you know, an extensive track record of being very successful major league bullpen options. And we know it's not just a fluke or anything. You know, some guys put up, you know, kind of fluky numbers in the bullpen
right.
sometimes.
Yeah, but in K-Rod's case, you're talking about just flat-out nasty stuff, you know, for
right
5-6 years now.
So, we've seen these guys pitch for several years now. We know the stuff kind of backs it up. So if you have these guys, you know, making it a seven-inning game, that's, you know, it's certainly a valuable weapon to have and be able to shore up a position of weakness from the previous year's team. And I think that was certainly a good move. You know, I think Andy Chavez is underrated. So I was, you know, if you're a Mets fan, you'll probably be disappointed to see him go. And he's just fun to watch play. I mean, I just love watching great defense. I wish, I'd rather watch a good web gem than a home run any night. But, you know, so I think he'll be missed a little bit. But, you know, I certainly being able to upgrade the bullpen like that, giving up the pieces that they did. You know, I think it was certainly a nice way for the Mets to upgrade the 2009 team.
But, well, before we wrap up, I'll throw out, so what do you think, what's the team right now that you think, okay, we're heading into kind of the Christmas lull when usually, I mean, this year there's a lot more still out there. I mean, you know, we still got, you know, Teixeira, we still got, you know, Manny Ramirez having to decide where they're going to play. And in Manny's case, maybe it's just deciding when he's going to take the Dodgers off or if he's going to become a National, which I
who knows
struggle to believe. But
who knows?
But what do you think, I mean, what team out there has kind of, I guess, the most of the teams that we consider like, you know, playoff contenders? I'm not talking about, you know, the Royals have a lot to do, the Nationals have a lot to do, but they're not really, you know, playing to win it in 2009 probably. What do you think, you know, which team out there still kind of has the most work to do now that we are really kind of out of the winter meetings?
Well, I think the Yankees certainly upgraded their pitching staff, and you look at their starting rotation right now. You know, it's certainly got to be one of the greatest strengths in Major League Baseball, the rotation with, you know, Sabathia, Burnett, Wong, Chamberlain. You know, it's certainly a great starting rotation. You know, maybe Phil Hughes, the guy who was one of the best pitching prospects in baseball,
and
finally comes through this year.
The funny thing is they're talking, though, like, no, you know, well, they still may go out and get a Derek Lowe or, you know, I mean,
exactly.
Ben Sheets. I mean, that would be just, wow, you know, they're really throwing money at it. But
I think you look at their lineup and they're still you know, it's the AL East. You know, maybe if they were in the AL West, they wouldn't have to. But, you know, I think in the American League East, now you have to compete with the Rays. You have to compete with the Red Sox. You have to compete with the Blue Jays. In a couple of years, you know, Matt Wieters and his Orioles there are going to be a team to contend with, too. So, you know, I think the lineup is still there's still some things they could address with the lineup in terms of, you know, upgrading the offense as well. I think a lot's been done on the run prevention side with the, you know, the acquisitions they've made with Sabathia and Burnett, but at the same time, I think the lineup could still use a.
Yeah, I mean, if you're ranking, you're comparing them to the Red Sox and the Rays, it's hard to say they're not the third. I mean, they're definitely third out of those three, you know, as far as lineup. I mean, because, yes, A-Rod still is, you know, an outstanding hitter, and Jeter still is, you know, he's not what he was, you know, at one point, but he's still very productive. But there are still, you know, a number of questions in that lineup. Okay, you know, if it does seem to me like right now, especially 6, 7, 8, 9 in that lineup, unless they do some things, is still pretty thin.
Yeah, I think the one other position is, you know, it's hard to imagine a Red Sox catcher who isn't Jason Varitek. You know, I think the, you know, Doug Mirabelli, Kevin Cash have kind of been used in there in recent years. You know, obviously catching Tim Wakefield.
Yeah, it's basically whoever can catch a knuckler.
Yeah, so I mean, you see the pretty dramatic drop off between Varitek versus some of those guys, and you know, it's interesting. I don't know what the Red Sox are going to do. You know, I still believe in Varitek. I think I would, you know, certainly a 1-year deal or a 2-year deal worth even, you know, $20 million to me. You know, if I were the Red Sox, I'd give that to him. And you know, not even considering some of the intangibles that he brings. You know, he had a down year in 2008, but you know, you look at his 2007, his 2006. I know he's getting a little bit older, so he's going to decline. But I still think he can bounce back a little bit to that, you know, a mixture of those last 3 years that he has done. So whether they do end up bringing him back with, you know, a 2-year deal or something like that, or they go out and acquire a, you know, there's certainly a lot of minor league catchers, you know, as we talked about before.
The year of the catcher, 2008.
You know, there's certainly a lot of talented catchers out there. You know, unfortunately, the Red Sox, you know, they have Mark Wagner, they have Exposito a little bit lower in the farm system, but you know, those really aren't the solutions for 2009, I don't think. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they do fill that void.
And I don't think the Red Sox are really a team right now that's really in a position to kind of just, unless it's a Matt Wieters type, which they're not going to get, you know, a stud catching prospect. I don't think they're in the position to kind of just to put a rookie in there, you know, as kind of the guy.
I mean, yeah.
So, and the interesting thing is now we're a little later in the offseason where there aren't, you know, the number of options out there are kind of dwindling. I mean, also the options maybe for Varitek, where Varitek would go otherwise, maybe dwindling too, which may help the Red Sox and Varitek get back together. But it is a situation where, you know, that's definitely a position that has to be addressed in some way. I can't imagine that there won't be some kind of move we'll see over the next, you know, month or two to kind of get that fixed before spring training. But, well, I'm J.J. Cooper, and been joined by Ben Badler. We appreciate you listening to the download of another Baseball America podcast. We will be taking next week off. We will not be podcasting on, you know, Christmas, basically. We will take that one off, but we'll be back for the new year. So happy holidays to everyone, you know, whatever holidays you celebrate. And thanks for the download, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks.